Good morning. This is your host, Christy Slaughter, on Super Talk Saturday mornings, WFHG 92.9, 33 degrees here this morning in Bristol, Virginia. We made it. We made it to spring.
We made it to spring.
I feel like a big yeehaw,
yeah.
A big woohoo.
A big...
I don't know. There needs to be some...
Well, give us
auditory
a big,
response to...
Give us a big yeehaw.
I don't know how to do that.
Oh, yeah. Come on.
Can you find one in your bank of sounds over there?
Hold on just a second. Let me see if I got one over.
Yeehaw! Perfect. That was exactly what I was envisioning.
That was it, right?
In my mind. That was it. I've got Rick Allen on the board. Good morning, Rick.
Good morning, Christy.
We've got a wonderful show to kick off spring. Chocked full of interesting things and conversations with people.
First day of spring.
It is the first day of spring. A little cool this morning when I woke up this morning and went outside. My car was covered in frost.
George asked me how I was going to celebrate, and I in turn asked him how he was going to celebrate. I'm just going to be taking a nap. And enjoying a relaxing Saturday afternoon.
Which is pretty similar to every Saturday afternoon
every
that you did.
Every Saturday afternoon, yeah. I love Saturday afternoon naps. How are you going to be celebrating?
I think I'm going to make a little Greek food.
Ooh.
I'll talk about it a little later on in the show.
Okay.
Don't worry, it's not going to be a whole segment. People stay with us because we have got some wonderful information this morning. We have Susan Ball with us. She has a new book entitled Honoring God with Your Money. It's a new book that helps Christians understand the God-oriented purpose of money and wealth. Susan Ball is a small business consultant. She is a former restaurant owner and a co-author of two financial management books. She spent the last 30 years teaching biblical money management principles. She has an MBA in finance and a bachelor's degree in mathematics and economics. Good morning, Susan.
Good morning, Christy.
Thank you so much for joining us. I know many of us have reevaluated our financial status. I know a lot of people have had employment changes, especially over the last year with the pandemic. So I think it's a wonderful conversation to talk about. I know that if people have grown up in the church or they have a biblical background, sometimes there's a little uncertainty about how finances and money fit in the world of Christianity and supply and things like that. So I'm really grateful that you're here this morning talking to us about your book, Honoring God with Your Money. It's a workbook, a Bible study that really gives people some information about the biblical principles of honoring God with your money and how you can incorporate those in your own life. Talk to us a little bit about your book and why you decided to develop this book to help others.
Okay, well, thank you. So in my full-time job, I do work for a small business development center, and I see hundreds of people every year, 250 or more in a typical year, many of whom want to start a business. And they come in and they don't realize that if their personal finances are a mess or they haven't saved up a substantial amount of money, they can't start a business. I see other people in my church who want to buy a home and maybe they don't have the down payment, you know, and they haven't connected with you have to manage your own money well in order to be able to accomplish the dreams and goals that God places in your heart. So I've been passionate for many, many years about helping people to understand that accomplishing many of their goals starts with managing their money, and God's Word provides the principles that we need to manage our money. But about 6 or 7 years ago, I was reading a book by Dwight L. Moody on pleasure and profit and Bible study. And I thought, I've never done my own just Bible study where I haven't had somebody else's works guiding me. So I got out my concordance and I started looking up any verse on money. And then I worked that into, you know, wealth and greed and charity. And as I did it, I thought, I need to share this with other people. So I made it into a Sunday school class, taught it at my church a few years ago, and then got busy with grandchildren and parents and set it aside. But in all this quiet time we've had with COVID, I had time to really rework that and have it edited and put out there and feel like it's a different approach to studying money that I've seen other people do. We're combining budgeting with an actual study of God's Word.
So when you talk about people managing their personal finances and being able to get a great plan and something that's working for them before they start a small business, I was talking to a gentleman the other day, and he is the father of two kids, and he's trying to support his wife. He feels like that he is in a small business that God led him to, and yet they can't make ends meet. If we have people that have taken the step, they've taken the plunge and said, okay, I really feel like that God has put this dream in my heart to start a small business or a side business, and it's not working. What are some of the reasons that either our personal finances aren't being fulfilled the way that we need, we don't have the abundance that we need, or a small business is not being profitable that we own?
Right. Well, the first thing I always tell people is you've got to trust God, and we demonstrate our trust by tithing. So even if you feel like you're not making money, a profit, or you don't have enough to live on, you know, the Bible teaches we give to God first, and we keep the 90%, and we trust Him. And it's amazing how you will see God move in your life when you trust Him. You know, and we have the example in the Bible of Elijah going to the widow and saying, make me some food. And she's like, well, I only have enough food for me and my son, then we're going to die. And he's like, no, feed me first. And then God met her need until, you know, the famine ended. So taking that step and really trusting God, but then also, you know, looking for help with his business, for one. I mean, he maybe needs guidance on how to better market his business in very low-cost ways, how to grow his business, and he can find his local Small Business Development Center. I'll give a plug for them. I know the lady in Bristol, Virginia, she's part of our network, and he can get some help and guidance that way. But the first thing we told all of our clients when the COVID hit was examine every expense that you have in your business and see what you can cut out right now. And sometimes there's just money that's really not needing to be spent, and you can cut back, but you can also build your business by better marketing and by internet right now. And a lot of our businesses have done very well in the pandemic, and then we have the other extreme where they've nearly lost everything. But seek guidance, seek help, look for sources of help in your community for his personal family needs as well. Maybe his church has a food pantry ministry or will help him with some of his bills. But the big thing is, you know, to really, really trust God and seek him and seek out sources of help.
We need to take a quick commercial break here in just a few minutes. Susan, if you can stay with us, I want to talk about a couple of the lessons that you have in your book, Honoring God with Your Money. This would be something that a person could do as an individual, as a family, or it would be a wonderful Bible study as you intended it to be, or a group community event. When we come back, I want to talk a little bit about the purpose of money.
Okay.
We'll be back after this quick commercial break. This is your host, Christy Slaughter, on Super Talk Saturday mornings, WFHG 92.9. Welcome back. This is your host, Christy Slaughter, on Super Talk Saturday mornings, WFHG 92.9. 34 degrees here in Bristol, Virginia. Happy spring, everyone. We have made it to the first day. Our high today is going to be 61 degrees and sunny. Time to get out and celebrate. I'm joined back with my special guest, Susan Ball. She is the author of Honoring God with Your Money. Before the commercial break, Susan, we discussed a little bit about the principles that the Bible contains about money and finances and how to manage those things in your personal and your professional life. Let's discuss a little bit the purpose of money.
Well, money, you know, is really simply a tool to make life easier and transactions easier. And so I start out talking about how if you had to barter for everything, it makes life a lot harder. Certainly, the first purpose of money is to take care of the needs of our family. And the Bible is very specific that if we don't care for our family, then we are worse than a heathen. But beyond that, you know, it is to help make the world a better place, to bless others by giving, you know. And so our intention should never be to be really wealthy, because that's not, I mean, God might make you wealthy, and if he does, that's great. But you still want to use money to help other people, to make life easier. But it's a tool. It shouldn't be a means in and of itself. Money can't bring you happiness. It can't bring you salvation. It can't bring you health. It can make a lot of those things easier, though. And so it's a tool.
Susan, you've spent the last 30 years teaching biblical money and management principles to people. It's fascinating to me to listen to people talk about finances and money. How much is our upbringing, whether we're talking about the church or the community that we lived in or our family, influencing the way that we feel about money as adults?
Oh, I think it's extremely major influence in your life. If you grew up with shortages and never having enough, you perceive that differently than if you were very comfortable, if you were very wealthy. You know, and so you may have fears from your childhood of never having enough money to, you know, have enough food to feel comfortable. So it definitely influences you. I saw my parents manage their money very well and honor God and always tithe. They felt as a Christian we should be the best at paying our bills and, you know, paying off our debts and having minimal debt. And so that definitely influenced me, where other people, you know, maybe struggled more, or maybe they've had a lot of money and they're just used to getting everything they want and not waiting. And so it definitely impacts you. And then what God brings you through impacts you. And I talk about my husband and I going off to graduate school with very little money and very little resources and not wanting to ask our parents. We probably could have, but being on a very, very tight budget and seeing God meet our needs time after time. So when we came to our own period of 3 years of him being unemployed and him being by far the major breadwinner, we weren't in a panic. Of course, we didn't know he was going to be unemployed for 3 years at the time. You know, we just trusted God to meet our needs and applied our biblical money management principles and got through 3 years of living on about 40% of our previous income.
Susan, what are some ways that we can possibly examine our beliefs about money and finances, cross-reference those to the principles in the Bible, and increase the health of our financial stability, whether we're talking about in our personal life or if we own a business?
Well, the first thing I think is to examine whether, you know, you are really trusting God. You know, if you have a bad day or a bad week or a bad month in your business or in your personal finances, do you panic or do you just know that God will see you through? And that's kind of a hard thing, but when you're, you know, been through this for years and years, it's a little easier. So the day my husband called me to say he got laid off, my boss was like, you know, do you need to go home? How are you? And I'm like, you know what? We're fine. God is responsible for seeing us through. God will see us through this. We're not dependent on a job. And if you have that attitude, it's because God's seen you through a lot of things. So if you are fearful about money, then you haven't probably learned to trust. If you get a bonus and the first thing you think about is how you can go out and splurge, you know, maybe you're not trusting God, or maybe you're not seeing yourself as a steward of the resources the way you should. I mean, certainly if you get a bonus, you want to spend some of that on yourself. But you should also be thinking about tithing, or how can I bless somebody else? And if you're really trusting God and applying these biblical principles, I think that starts to become part of your just your nature that, you know, okay, God has blessed me, now how can I bless somebody else? And I look back to, you know, Jesus talking about what's going with you to heaven. When you get to heaven, you know, what's going to be the wood, hay, and stubble, and what's going to be the gold and silver? And him saying, if you gave a cup of water to a little one in my name, you gave that to me. If you fed the hungry, you gave that to me. And so as we really adopt these biblical principles, I think that becomes just second nature to us. We're thinking about how God wants me to use this money, and that the money that I have, or the talents or the other resources, are just things that God has given me to steward for him. And if I look at myself as a steward, it makes me, you know, want to use the money in a way that honors God, because I'm a steward of this money for him. It's not really my money.
Susan, you mentioned that your book, Honoring God with Your Money, is a very different approach to looking at finances than you have seen before. And you've been counseling and helping people in this industry for many years. Why is your book, Honoring God with Your Money, different than what we've seen as far as financial programs based on biblical principles in the past?
Well, typically what I see is people writing and sharing their views, and then they, you know, then you do budgeting instead of you really digging in and applying those principles to your life. So instead of me just writing, you know, it is a Bible study. I want people to look up verses, and I want them to think about how these verses relate to their life. But also some of the stories that God, you know, showed me, you know, had biblical principles aren't the stories that you usually see. Like the prodigal son is usually seen as somebody who's walked away from the Lord and come back. And that's true, but it has a lot of money principles, because the son wanted all of his inheritance at one time, and then he wasted it, and that didn't bring him any joy, and he wound up in poverty and then humbling himself and going back to his father. That's not a story that I've seen related to finances before, but God showed me that that was something that needed to be in there. But so the first half of the book is looking at money and the way our relationship to money, and that money doesn't bring satisfaction. It doesn't even bring the feeling of safety and peace. You know, people who have lots of money always feel like they'd be more comfortable if they had a little bit more money. There's never a place where they're satisfied with the money. And then so after doing that through six lessons, then we look at how to apply the money. And we also look at attitudes toward money, which is came from Larry Burkett, really, that when we get into money problems, we usually have a wrong attitude. And that's not something, again, that I see in a lot of other budgeting books. It's, you know, usually it's more just, this is why you should budget. There are some really good resources on transferring wealth to heaven and generosity, but then they don't get into the budgeting aspect, and none of them are really Bible studies.
Susan, if people are interested in learning more about your book, Honoring God with Your Money, where can they find that information?
All right, so the book is available on Amazon, and it's published through Westbow, but they can also email me at susan.ball5@aol.com. They can get on my list for newsletters. I'm going to be putting out a newsletter probably every 2 or 3 months. I haven't started that yet, with encouragement and sharing testimonies and things. But I've also created leader resources that are available to anybody free of charge just by emailing me. There are activities and discussion points, statistics, and illustrations to help enhance a Bible study group, and, you know, to give you more discussion and things. And all that is, they can just email me. And I will have a website soon. I also have a blog, susaneball.blog.
Thank you much, thank you so much, Susan, for being on the show today. This is a topic that affects all of us, whether we want to take a serious look at our financial status and where we are and where God wants to move us. This is a topic that I know a lot of us are very interested in and would like to have a better, healthy financial basis for our lives and for our business. So thank you so much, Susan.
Well, thank you for having me. I've enjoyed talking with you.
Happy spring.
Thank you. You too. Enjoy the weather in Bristol.
Thank you. We're going to take a quick commercial break. We'll be back here in just a few minutes. This is your host, Christy Slaughter, on Super Talk Saturday mornings, WFHG 92.9. Welcome back. This is your host, Christy Slaughter, on Super Talk Saturday mornings, WFHG 92.9, 37 degrees here in Bristol, Virginia. We're speaking with Kim Bryan. She is the executive director of Rattle the Stars. Rattle the Stars is a nonprofit organization that provides community-based suicide prevention services. Good morning, Kim.
Good morning.
Thank you for joining us today, talking about this incredible program. You have earned degrees in psychology and sociology and completed graduate studies in sociology at the University of Illinois. I want to talk a little bit about why you decided to develop this non-for-profit organization, Rattle the Stars. I have a friend who had posted about your program on Facebook. She had not used your services, but one of her friends did, and it was literally life-saving for them. Discuss with us why you decided to start this program and why you all focus on supporting living, not just preventing suicide.
Yeah, sure. So glad your friend's friend had a good experience with us. Unfortunately, like a lot of people who do suicide prevention work, I started doing this because I have personal experience. So when I was in grad school working on my doctorate in sociology, my oldest son died of suicide. And that was really traumatic. I had a really difficult time functioning for a while and ended up leaving school. And it wasn't necessarily something I set out to do, but it's something that I kind of got nudged into because talking to people in the community about my son's death, we started to realize that there was a need for this. People consistently told me that, that they just didn't know what to say or they didn't know what to do in those situations if they had someone that they thought might be suicidal. And so we really saw a need for this, started looking at some programs and, found that they didn't really provide what people told me that they were looking for. And so it just became a situation where I felt like if, I have this ability, then this is something that I should do. And so started doing the work and built up in the community. And we do take a very different approach to suicide prevention because often people view suicide as this thing that happens within this individual, right? That this is rooted in the person. But we take a very community-based look and understand that what we're feeling inside ourselves and our thoughts and our feelings about ourselves, these are affected by the experiences that we have, and they're affected by our life in our communities. And so we really want to take the approach of not just preventing people from dying, because a lot of times the goal is like, we just need to stop this person from attempting suicide. If they don't attempt, then they can't die, and then we have done our job. But really, people have those thoughts of suicide because there are, negative life experiences that they're having. They have unmet needs. There's negative things happening to them. And so what we want to do is also work on changing those experiences and improving our community so that we can also promote living, so that we can create a world that people want to live in, that they're having their emotional needs met and their material needs met, and they feel fulfilled and happy, and then they want to live.
Kim, what do we do if we have someone in our life, a friend, a colleague, a family member, who we notice issues of depression, or they're even talking about not being here anymore, or maybe things would be better if something happened to them, and they're starting to change their language? What can we do as a friend to support them? I know sometimes people will reach out, but oftentimes people will end up being quiet and really going inward. So what can we do as individuals and in a community to be able to support those people in a really helpful way?
Well, the most important thing is, if you notice those things in a person, ask them about suicide. Now, the reason a lot of people don't ask and they're kind of silent about that is because we feel uncomfortable. Like, this is something that is really scary for us to ask, because there can be a lot of fear of, you know, if this person says yes, I don't know what to say to them and I don't know what to do. They're afraid of saying the wrong thing and kind of pushing them to that direction. So then what ends up happening is people don't say anything at all. And that's the worst thing that we can do. It's better to say something than to say nothing. And so really what I encourage people to do is just ask that question. If somebody is making those references to not being here anymore or not wanting to live, just ask them directly. When you say that you don't want to be here anymore, do you mean that you're thinking about suicide? And use that word, suicide, so that, you know, you're really clear about what you're talking about, and open that conversation with that person. Give them space to talk about what is bothering them, what they're experiencing, because really when they have the opportunity to talk about it, that alleviates the intensity of those feelings. It can get those things out, and then they can start to feel a little bit better. And then very importantly, don't be judgmental, right? Whatever they're going through, always give them that unconditional positive regard. Understand that they're really doing the best that they can. They're trying their hardest in the situation that they have. And just be that empathetic, listening ear, be that supportive person for them.
Kim, if we ask that question and we ask the question, are you thinking about suicide? And they say yes. Other than being empathetic, non-judgmental, and providing an open space, what are our other options or responsibilities? What can we do to help them to really change some of those things in their life that are possibly causing them to feel like wanting to commit suicide?
Sure. So you want to ask them what they need, right? So it's very important to let them have the agency, empower them, let them decide what is helpful for them. So oftentimes when we're trying to help someone who's having thoughts of suicide, we do the things that we think are helpful. And we may have this idea that everybody who has thoughts of suicide, well, they have to be hospitalized so that they don't hurt themselves. And unfortunately, those really restrictive interventions happen a lot, and that deters people from talking about it because they don't necessarily need that or they don't want that. These may just be, you know, passive thoughts. They're not actively planning to attempt suicide. And so really asking them, what do you need? When they talk about those problems, right, make sure that you listen first, because we want to give them time to talk. But then you can talk to them about, do you want some help with this, right? If it's financial issues or relationship problems or academic stress or job stress, whatever is leading to these thoughts, you can help them address those problems. And then addressing those things can help to alleviate those thoughts. Now, if this is a situation where this person tells you, yes, I am planning to attempt suicide, right? They're talking about what their plan is, how they intend to die, the means that they plan to use, that gets a little bit more of a serious situation. And at that point, we want to encourage them to seek help from other people. Now, this is something that you may not feel that you know how to handle, and a lot of people don't. So at that point, you can say, others will know more about what to do, and we can find someone who can help. We can do this together. And then I would encourage people to have some available suicide prevention hotline numbers. I always tell people, plug these in your phone so that you have them. We always recommend the crisis text line because people like to text. So that's 741-741, and the National Suicide Prevention Lifeline, 1-800-273-8255. But really importantly, we have to remember that not everybody necessarily needs really intensive mental health interventions and support. Sometimes just addressing these things directly and helping people find the solutions that they need to those problems can be really beneficial too. And that's where the work is really focused in our community. What can we do for this person to help them meet their needs so that they don't have these feelings?
Kim, we need to take a quick commercial break. When we come back, I want you to talk to us a little bit about some things to look for. As an observer, I know some people are vocal when they're thinking about suicide and some people are not. So what kind of things can we look for? And I'm wondering if you all have noticed with Rattle the Stars an increase in thoughts about suicide and things like that over this past year during the pandemic. Mm-hmm. We'll be back here in just a few minutes. This is your host, Christy Slaughter, on Super Talk Saturday mornings, WFHG 92.9. Welcome back. This is your host, Christy Slaughter, on Super Talk Saturday mornings, WFHG 92.9, 38 degrees here in Bristol, Virginia. And we're joined back with our special guest, Kim Bryan. She is the executive director of Rattle the Stars. Kim, before the commercial break, I posed a couple questions. What, as observers, can we look for as possible signs that someone is thinking about suicide?
Yeah, so there are some signs, warning signs, that we, encourage people to look for. These are things like isolating themselves, withdrawing, increased alcohol or drug use, being reckless, loss of future thought, where they're not planning about the future anymore. And yes, those things like talking about death or saying that they're a burden on people or doing things that it seems like they're kind of getting their affairs in order to prepare for being gone. But what I also want to say is we have to caution ourselves and understand our limitations. So it is important that we know these warning signs, but we also have to understand that we're not really good at recognizing these. We just don't do a good job of this as people. And when we do recognize them, we tend to attribute them to other things. So we also encourage to think about the situations that people experience that can lead to these thoughts of suicide. So people who have some sort of distress in their life, some sort of crisis that they've experienced, a trauma. This could be things like job losses, financial difficulties, academic stress for students. It could be things like a sexual assault if they're experiencing domestic partner violence, bullying, having chronic health problems. All of these things are things that increase that distress in people's lives. And so if you know people that have some of these risk factors or are going through some of these situations, then you don't necessarily have to wait for the warning signs. You can just talk to them about this and let them know that, others who are in this situation, a similar situation as you, sometimes they have thoughts of suicide, and you can just ask them if that's something they've thought about. Starting those conversations earlier is really important because we may not recognize those warning signs until it's too late.
Kim, have you noticed an increase in people reaching out and needing resources during the pandemic?
Yes, absolutely. And so there is an increase in people reporting suicidal thoughts during the pandemic. There's an increase in calls to crisis lines, an increase in people who are saying that this is really distressing and they may have thoughts of suicide. But really importantly, the suicide rate during the pandemic, the number of deaths, has gone down because there's also some really important protective factors that are happening as well. And so some of the things that you know, we have to be aware of is understanding what the reasons are that people are experiencing that distress during the pandemic, because it is really distressful. But a lot of that is related to financial stress, job losses, layoffs, lack of our usual activities, lack of social connection because we can't be together and touch each other and spend that time together. And for some people who already have things that they're dealing with, they've lost a lot of those normal outlets that they use for coping skills. And so what we can think about is how do we replace those things? How can we manage those distressing events? Because those are just things that are going to happen during the pandemic, and we can't help that. But we can help people manage them. So the financial relief that's come from the federal government is really beneficial, getting those stimulus payments to people, the unemployment insurance, the loans to help people with their businesses. All of those things can offset those severe financial difficulties and help people to get through those job losses. So those are really protective. The ways that we come together as a community and make sure we're reaching out to our neighbors, to our elderly who may be alone and not be able to have contact, thinking of ways that we can still connect with each other, whether that's checking in on the phone or by Zoom or over social media, you know, whatever that is, finding those ways that we can still maintain those connections. And so this is where, again, it really takes our community coming together and making sure that we're supporting everybody. And those things can help to protect so that even though people are feeling distress and these thoughts of suicide may be happening, they don't have to act on them because they do see hope. They see that things have the potential to get better. They see that other people care about them and they feel those connections even if they can't be physically together.
Kim, what type of services do you all provide with Rattle the Stars? I know that you've got a wonderful page of resources. There are all sorts of different hotlines and support that are specialized depending on a person's circumstances or perhaps they're a veteran. What types of things do you all do with your program?
So we try to work with places in the community to help them to develop suicide response plans. So this can be businesses, schools, organizations, religious institutions, whatever it is. We try to help people to come up with a crisis plan for what to do to address suicide with the people that are connected to their group. So this includes thinking about prevention. So what can I do to prevent people from having thoughts of suicide, to build that world that people want to live in? It includes intervention. What do I do to help this person who is potentially having thoughts of suicide? And then also, importantly, postvention. If there is someone that dies of suicide, how do we help each other heal? Because that's a really traumatic experience for people. So how do we help people through that healing process? Also, we do suicide intervention trainings. So we teach people, right, how to be that supportive person, how to understanding about suicide, how to recognize this person that may be having thoughts of suicide, and then really all of those things that we can do to support them and help provide them with what they need so that they feel like they want to live. We also do other community events, so, you know, making sure that people have information and resources and really just getting out and talking about it. because oftentimes when we're out and we're talking about suicide, people come to us and they share their stories and they share their experiences because they recognize that that's a safe place for them to do so. And oftentimes suicide is so taboo in our culture, and people are afraid to talk about it because they don't know how people are going to react. And so they see that as a safe place where they can share those experiences. And that really helps them to find connection so that they don't feel so alone.
Kim, if people want to learn more information and be able to get in touch with some of the resources that we've discussed today, where can they find that information?
So they can go to our website. It's rattlethestars.org. We have a lot of information about our services on there. That resource page, if they just click it on resources at the top of the page. And there's even some flyers that you can pull up and print that have some of those emotional support resources on there so they can connect with those resources.
Thank you so much, Kim, for being with us this morning and all the work that you're doing. I know this would be a wonderful resource for anyone in the community, if you have a community organization, a church, schools. So I really just appreciate all that you're doing and for sharing this morning with us on the show.
Absolutely. Thank you for having me on and giving me this opportunity to talk to the community about suicide prevention.
We hope you have a wonderful weekend, Kim.
You too.
Thank you. We're going to take a quick news break here in just a few minutes. I've got Rick Allen on the board. How you doing over there, Rick?
I'm hanging in there.
You're hanging in there?
Yeah.
Are you sleepy? Do we need coffee?
I'm going to get some, yeah.
There was only a part, maybe one cup in the coffee maker, and it was cold.
Hopefully they've got have got some more made.
George is pretty good about doing that.
Sometimes, yeah.
As he leaves, if I turn my coffee cup upside down when I get here, just as a subtle hint, not to be rude, he'll make a fresh pot. So,
hey, yeah.
Let's go take this news break and see if there's some coffee. Thank you all for tuning in. We'll be back here in just a few minutes. This is your host, Christy Slaughter, on Super Talk Saturday mornings, WFHG 92.9. This is your host, Christy Slaughter, on Super Talk Saturday mornings, WFHG 92.9, 40 degrees. We're here live in Bristol, Virginia, and we're with our next guest, Mike Rickett. He is with Better Health Breathing. Good morning, Mike.
Good morning.
We're catching you very early. You are not in Southwest Virginia or Northeast Tennessee.
No, we're in Colorado where we don't have any air.
Well, we'll try to send some your way. How cold has it been in Colorado recently?
Oh, it was not too bad, really. We just had the crazy snowstorm that dumped like 30 inches on us last Sunday, Monday, but just made it everybody have a snow day and had a good time.
I had shared with our listeners before the break that I attended your Life Wellness and Holistic Health Certification class on Sunday. I learned so much. I've taken a class in the past with you, and you've got this brand new program about the importance of breathing and teaching people really how to breathe. There were several things that we discussed in the class, and I had mentioned to our listeners, this is not a debate this morning about masks and whether we should wear them or not, but there has been some recent studies about the impact of mask wearing, and you've got some tools to help us with that.
Yes, definitely. I mean, it's one of those things where we've been doing it all of our life or since creation, and we've really never taken a look at what it could do for our bodies or even how it works. We use it from everything from emotions to health to getting focus to actually even creating an environment for potential disease care. And that's one of the things that's been real interesting is it started back kind of the research in 1948 with the Framingham studies, which is in your part of the area, in Framingham, Massachusetts, and they were evaluating health issues, and they didn't really know what to evaluate because they didn't have very many evaluation tools. They didn't have cholesterol or triglycerides or HDLs or LDLs. They basically looked at heart rate, blood pressure, and breathing. And what's interesting, over the years, they've redone it, got new subjects, people that came in, gone out, all those type things. And the one common thing they had was health is directly related to lung capacity.
Mike, one of the things that you shared with us during the class was the importance of oxygen for metabolizing fat. You're on your website, betterhealthbreathing.com. You've got a blog with all sorts of information, and there is one area that talks about breathing for weight loss. I know that a lot of us have gained some extra weight during the pandemic, whether we've been wearing a mask or we're not in our traditional work environment. And so we're at home where there's much more access to some foods that we maybe are not consuming. What is the impact for breathing and weight gain or weight loss?
Oh, there's a lot of different things. From the first standpoint is when you're in a constant state of stress, you release cortisol, which then over time eventually becomes storage areas mainly around the midsection. When you have that belly, it's really a cortisol belly because your body's dealing with the stress, doesn't know what to do with it, so it kind of puts it around the midsection, fills it full of water, and then lets it sit there for a while, and until it either turns it into, you know, or permanent storage, or you get rid of it. And the other thing, when you're looking at your energy of your cells, is called the mitochondria, and it works off a few things, off of fat and oxygen. Well, if you're giving your body adequate amount of oxygen, you can burn more fat with that. And the other thing with it, too, is it allows your body to recover better. Every cell in your body, trillions of cells of your body, are rejuvenated constantly when you breathe. And if you don't give it adequate air in, things start to happen. And you're getting disease states, everything from cardiovascular disease to asthma, hypertension, diabetes. And they've even found now that we can offset things like scoliosis with specific breathing patterns and positions of your body. So it's a new way of looking at an old thing that we've done.
Mike, of course, we all know that breathing is essential to life. I think about a baby being born, and we've talked some about diaphragmatic breathing. Mm-hmm. Are babies born knowing how to do diaphragmatic breathing, or is this a technique that's learned? Why do you think that most of us are not breathing adequately?
That's a really good question. When you look at an infant, they don't know they can breathe through their mouth. So if you were to, like, cover up their mouth, they'd have no problem. If you pinch their nose, they're going crazy because they don't understand that. Then over time, they kind of realize, okay, we can actually breathe through our mouth. And then things start to go downhill. And we look at what we call cyclical breathing versus linear breathing. So a linear breathing is like you breathe in through your mouth, breathe out through your mouth, and your whole body just kind of goes up and down with it. You see a lot of people when they're stressed, they say, take a big breath. And everything kind of goes up. Their shoulders go up. Their head goes up. Their eyebrows go up. Everything goes up, and they go out. And it actually doesn't really oxygenate your body. When you're doing the cyclical breathing, where you breathe in through your nose and out through your mouth, for one thing, it takes longer, so it gets more chance for the oxygen to absorb in the body. And the other thing it does is it kind of massages the entire system so it's ready for the next breath.
Mike, you ran us through some breathing exercises, and there was an inhalation, and then there was a holding of the breath before the exhale. What benefit mm-hmm. is that when you have that stillness where you're holding the breath before you exhale?
Yeah, that's a good question. That's one of the things we were trying to figure out when my partner, her name is Sherry Lampiers, and she and I looked at this going, how do we create this idea of holding, and why was it good? And we looked at a lot of like CO2. We said CO2 is a bad thing. We're always trying to get rid of it. In essence, it's not a bad thing. It actually is a very strong vasodilator. So that when you hold your breath a little bit, your body goes into oxygen hunger, and that CO2 then dilates the vessels. So your next breath, you can get more oxygen in. And it's an amazing technique to do with it. So the average person takes somewhere right around 12 to 15 breaths a minute. When you look at an athlete, they're taking in around 6. They're taking in half as many breaths, but getting the same amount of oxygen in their body. So if you're looking at this, okay, we have X amount of breaths in our lifetime. If we're taking half as many as the next person, we're probably going to live longer. Okay, that's pretty obvious. But more importantly is the oxygen uptake. So if you're taking 12 breaths a minute, and you need 6 liters of oxygen per minute to survive, That means every breath you're getting half a liter of oxygen into your body. Now, you don't absorb all the oxygen from the air we breathe because there's some left in the nasal, there's some left in the trachea, so there's going to be some dead space air. And if you have 12 breaths, that means you have 12 dead space airs as well. And so that 6 liters that we're taking in is really only around 4. But if you were to take a slower, longer breath and kind of hold it with a 6 breaths, like someone who's in really good shape, you would only be taking in 6 breaths, which means each breath was a liter. That dead space is half the dead space. So now you're getting around 5 liters of oxygen, 25% more oxygen into your body by breathing slower versus fast.
Mike, what are some of the symptoms of a lack of oxygen and some of the long-term things that can result, some of those symptoms, if people are having low oxygen levels?
Oh, it's really, really prevalent in the environment right now. Stress will relate to it. Once you get even a lower percentage, maybe 2 or 3% lower in your oxygen saturation, you start to get mind fog. You start to get irritable. You start to have issues with focus. Your body can't process fats as well, so you start getting more lethargic. Your body just becomes basically catabolic. It's starting to eat itself. It's trying to find ways of getting oxygen. And when you start dropping down below, you know, 90%, normal is between 95 and 100% oxygen saturation. When you're below 90%, things are really starting to happen. And you get irritable for no reason. You just can't concentrate. You can't sleep. You can't sleep, you can't recover. Your exercise is going downhill because you can't work out hard because you're immediately into anaerobic threshold and your body doesn't work. And when you get around 85, it causes irreversible organ damage. And that's where you'll see some really bad things happening, like when someone drowns or whatever, you could get, you know, brain damage, your organs start to shut down. So it's a very complicated system, but we really can control it by controlling how we breathe, how we move when we do breathe, and then also being conscious with it.
Mike, we need to take a quick news break. When we come back, I want you to discuss with us how we can know what our oxygen saturation levels are and some other simple ways that we can increase those in our lives.
Outstanding.
We'll be back after this quick news break. This is your host, Christy Slaughter, on Super Talk Saturday mornings, WFHG 92.9. Welcome back. This is your host, Christy Slaughter, on Super Talk Radio, WFHG 92.9, 41 degrees here in Bristol, Virginia. And we're joined back with my special guest, Mike Rickett. He is with Better Health Breathing. The website is betterhealthbreathing.com. Before the news break, we were talking about some common symptoms of low oxygen levels, a lack of oxygen. Mike, if we're curious, of course, you gave the percentages of where we want to be and some of the dangerous levels if you have low oxygen levels or lack of oxygen. How can people know what their oxygen saturation levels are?
Very good question. And it's really a simple tool. It's called a pulse oximeter. And all you do is stick it on your finger, and it tells you two things, obviously, your pulse and then your oxygen saturation. And it's what they'll do in the doctor's office. They'll do it when you're in emergency room, everything, just to kind of see where the body is. And what I use that specific thing for, which you can get anywhere at any store, and it costs anywhere from, you know, $15 to hundreds of bucks if you want them to keep the data and chart it or whatever. But all I do with it is, one, the oxygen saturation tells me your level of recovery. So if you're at 98, 99, 100%, you're going to see Jesus today in your workout because you are rested, you're ready to go. And if you're right around 95, 94, that means you're tired. So if we work out really hard that day, it's going to take you a couple extra days to recover, and that means it's really detrimental to your body. Now, the pulse rate is something that most people don't look at when they're looking, going into the workouts. They just think, okay, I just go do some energy drinks or take 14 cups of coffee before my workout so I'm wired when I work out. That's counterintuitive to a good workout. The goal is to keep your heart rate as low as possible so that when you do put stress on it, it can go up and down more. But if your normal heart rate, which is around 70, and you take an energy drink and now it's 90 at rest, that means you've lost 20 beats of recovery. So the goal is to really create an environment that is high in oxygen saturation, low in excitation, and therefore you have the optimal body for recovery in your workout.
Mike, you have trained and certified over 18,600 trainers to date, 266 this year alone. If people want to know more about your certifications, clients that you work with, and information, you do have a personal website, MikeRickett.com, where people can learn more. That is absolutely incredible how many lives that you're changing. Now you've got this new program, Better Health Breathing. What types of things? I know you've got an event that's coming up next Saturday, but what can people learn about breathing and incorporating these new techniques into our lifestyle?
Oh, that's great, because the actual changing up in your body when you're looking at using breath as controlling the monitor, we really don't count reps anymore. We count breaths. And what it is we actually do a program. It's a 6-week program where we go step by step into developing breathing. It's, believe it or not, at times you get so caught up in the breathing you can't concentrate on anything else. And we have different techniques of actually increasing your lung capacity. We also have ones that can make it so that you are able to deal with stress better. We have ways of creating from posture to create that new breathing patterns. But most importantly is learning how to use more of your diaphragm. The average person uses less than 10% of their diaphragm. And if you could just increase that by even 5%, that means your efficiency of breathing is incredibly changed. And that will make your entire life better. We do have both. We have individuals. We have groups we work with. And that 6-week program is based upon getting that stress form. I also have another website we're working with now, which is called Application in Motion. And what we're looking with that one is to develop the lifestyle of health as opposed to just training athletes or training whatever. Right now, we need more stress reduction and better health habits to transfer over. And again, the foundation is our breathing.
Mike, how has the fitness industry changed and where is it morphing into since the pandemic?
It's been, a lot of people doing more in home, obviously, a lot of online stuff. But a lot of what happens when you're doing online, we don't have the human interaction. And that's the part where we can help each other, the energy fields, the ability to create a bond, sharing success stories, failures, emotions, happy, sad. It's a real important part of health. And that health is also about, perception. If we only get one view of something, it may be good for you, it may not. But if you have a whole bunch of different views, it works really well. And our bodies kind of work off of a funky thing called the sympathetic nervous system and parasympathetic. And the sympathetic nervous system is your fight or flight. And that's in a lot. But your body doesn't like that very much. It's like if there's a tiger in the room, you freak out. But you either run away from him or you go fight him. And then what happens is we get a dysfunctional view of that, and all of a sudden we go, oh, wait a minute, that's not a real tiger, it's a stuffed tiger. But our bodies are so used to just going into fight or flight mode, a perception that's not really a stress becomes a stress. And then the parasympathetic, which is rest and recovery, that's the one that makes our bodies relax, gets rid of disease states, makes things work well. So when you do diaphragmatic breathing, the lower part of your lungs deal with the parasympathetic nervous system, and the up part, when you take a shallow breath, is sympathetic. So if all you're doing is breathing shallow, you're in a constant panic mode. If you breathe deep, you relax.
Mike, you have been in this field, an educator, for over 35 years. You're an award-winning, nationally recognized trainer of the trainers, fitness motivator, author, certifier. But I'm wondering, I don't know your personal background. Why did you decide that your passion would be helping others to reach their health and fitness goals?
Well, a lot of my family history was not good for health. In fact, both my parents had heart attacks really young. My brother struggled through, and was very successful battling pancreatic cancer, unfortunately passed. And it kind of worked into that more for sometimes you were given a situation, you know, that might be that, you know, like God gave me a situation really bad when I was a kid, which turned into helping a lot of people, which I love. And my brother and I worked together for 27 years in fitness industry, creating programs, not necessarily just for performance, but life performance. So you're a domestic athlete, or you're a social athlete, or you're a business athlete. Everybody's an athlete in their own world. And we want to make them so that they're the best parent, the best friend, the best co-worker that we possibly can, so everybody can move forward. And that's been kind of the fun thing about it. You know, at first I wanted to just work with athletes, and now I go, you know what? I like the world as a athletic stage, and everybody performs at their own level. And meeting Sherry, my partner, was interesting because she's in the music world, and I was kind of off on that, not really true. I didn't understand it. And now I absolutely have an amazing compassion for anybody that performs, whether it's music, sports, with math problems, whatever. And it creates a new environment of success all around. So you appreciate people, and in that way you open up to their ideas, and it's been phenomenal.
Mike, if people want to learn more about Better Health Breathing, this is a program that anyone could do. All of us could benefit from this, right?
Absolutely. And we're working it through. We're doing more and more work with it each time. Each time we go through it, we learn more about it. If people, when we have our group trainings, they work with a one time a week meeting, and then we have an email option for them so they can write in all the emails they want so we can help them out. And then giving them homework to work on each process, and each week builds on the next so that they get a great overall view of what's happening. By the time they get through the 6 weeks, they've pretty much transformed their life on how they think about exercise, think about eating, think about breathing, think about recovery. And they've probably created a whole new gamut of ideas and activities and behaviors that everything from road rage to rest from their job and their relationships become something they can deal with, and they give them the tools to work with. It's really fun.
Mike, thank you so much for being on the show and sharing this information with us today. It's exciting for me, being in this industry, to watch how adaptable the industry is becoming and all the things that we're learning, because some of the fitness programs that were used 10, 15, 20 years ago, we're now realizing that based on scientific studies, there are better ways to do it, healthier ways to do it, and customizing programs for individuals. And so I'm really thrilled that you're focusing on breathing, something that we all do and can benefit from. Again, if you don't mind, give us your website and your contact information if people want to learn more.
Absolutely. The website is betterhealthbreathing.com, and you can be reached there. My phone number, if they want to get a hold of me that way, I have no problem, is 970-484-8847, and that can also be text to it. But the best way to get a hold of us is on the website. We have a part where you can sign up for our newsletter. We've been sending it out. It's been really getting some fun hits, which I love. But a lot of things we're doing is getting those seminars out. We're kind of shocked by how much people are interested in it, which is a great thing. But we really would like to share the information. Again, we're having one next Saturday, and it's just $25. It's well worth that. We're doing that just so we can get our business up and running really well. And we do seminars usually twice a month. We're trying to go some live, some online. Obviously, it's going to be hard to go back and forth from East Coast to the Midwest, but we'll definitely get a way to work with you guys.
Thank you again for all the work that you're doing. Mike, happy spring to you.
Thank you very much. We're looking forward to it.
Thank you all for tuning in. Happy spring. Congratulations, y'all. We made it. We'll be back here next Saturday. Thanks for your help, Rick Allen.
And thank you, Christy.
This is your host, Christy Slaughter, on Super Talk Saturday mornings, WFHG 92.9.